This is a Pinball News production.
Hey guys, I'm Eric. I'm a new electrical engineer with Jack. I just started working for him back in January. Today we're going to be showing you a video. Then we're going to be going through a presentation on the manual and the play field. And then if the satellites align, we're going to get Jack on Skype and have him talk to us for a little while. So,
give me a little bit of your background, Eric, what you're doing with the company and all.
So I just started with Jack. I recently finished my undergraduate in electrical engineering and then my master's in mechanical engineering at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I've been in the game industry since I was 4 or so. My dad...
He wasn't much shorter then either.
My dad is an operator in Wisconsin. Some of you might know him, Kingpin Games. My dad is Norv. So when I handed Jack my resume, he seemed pretty happy to bring me on board. Which?
Eric's part of the new breed. We were just talking about that with one of the customers up here. The direction that the company's taking, getting some new guys involved. You know, the old designers, the classics, they're not going to be around forever. So, you know, we need to start passing some of that knowledge on. So he's training under Joe Balser and Jim Thornton. My name is Butch Peel, and I love pinball. That basically says it all. Playing the games, restoring the games, touching up play fields, repairing printed circuit boards, playing, watching other people play, talking about it. I mean, I'm in my element here. I just love it with all of the people here that have the same passion that I do. I'm an electrical engineer also. I work part-time for Jack right now. I still work with my full-time job. I'm an electrical engineer at the U.S. Army Research Laboratory at White Sands Missile Range. I'm a civil servant, work for the U.S. Army. I've been out there for 28 years in June and looking to retire here in the next couple of years and kind of come full-time with Jack and doing something, you know, the opportunity of a lifetime, like I call it. I got to pinch myself each and every day. I mean, getting to work with these guys and be involved with something that I'm so passionate about, it's hard to explain. It's hard to put into words. I'm working on the manual right now. And 2 years ago, I met Jack at this very show when he started talking about, he had just announced the starting up of his company about 3 months earlier. Got up on the stage and just had all kinds of energy, a lot of excitement. I could tell that he was going to build something spectacular. I said, told my wife just before we came to the show, she's a big Wizard of Oz fan, and I told her, I don't see how I can afford one of those. And when I heard him talk, I went back afterwards and I told her, one way or another, we got to make that work. You know, there's a payment plan. She's like, I have the $250 down payment here in my purse. You know, we can do it right now. So yeah, we were on board immediately. Soon after that, I started on the Wizard of Oz forum. You know, reading and checking posts and adding in where I could put my 2 cents. And Jack started some kind of a post about his slogan for his new company. You know, he'd like to get some suggestions. And I was sitting in my parents' house. I was there for the weekend drinking a cup of coffee with my slippers on. And I thought of one and typed it in. And it turned out he really liked it. And he trademarked it and made it the company slogan. And that's the Jack of all trades, master of fun. So that's on all the pinball machines now, something I was very proud of. And I thought, you know, boy, that's really cool. Now I've made my mark in pinball, you know, that's really neat. Well, then I started emailing him and talking to him. I do board repair through the mail, circuit board repair. So I told him, you know, have you given any thought to how you're going to repair your boards in this game? You're going to have a new system and you know, maybe I could become like a factory authorized place to repair your boards. And the more we emailed back and forth, the more he saw how much passion I had for this company and for this project and for pinball in general. And next thing you know, he's wanting me on board as part of the team. And that's, like I say, I got to pinch myself every day. I mean, I've been going to all these shows and meeting all these great people and sitting alongside the Joe Balsers and the Erics and you know, just having the ball, having the time of my life. And I'm so thankful, so grateful, and so enthusiastic. It's hard to put into words again. So we're going to start with a video. This was our Christmas open house. Jack opened the doors of the factory on the December 14th of last year, and he invited a bunch of people to come, customers, anybody who wanted to come in, basically. One of the guys was on his polygon.com. He made a video, and he interviewed some people, and Jack wanted us to show this video to start. So without any further ado, we'll go to that.
As good as you might be, on any given game, I might get that really great ball and beat you. It's a give and take with it. It beats you up and you beat it up in a way, but I think it's in a respectful way. You know, you come back again and say, I'm gonna get this thing and I'm gonna master this and I'm gonna get better at it. And the more you play, the better you get. So that's pretty cool.
We're gonna go see Jersey Jack Pinball. They're working on a new table for the Wizard of Oz. This is pretty big deal. There haven't been a lot of pinball tables made since the 80s. Only Stern Pinball has been making them, I guess, the last decade or so. So this is gonna be all brand new, and we're gonna be one of the first people to see it.
For many years, pinball was at the top of its game, so to speak, but of course, like all things, it suffered a slump. Kids got into the video games and the home video. But in the last several years, I've seen it make a big comeback because of all the theme games. And if you want a theme game, The Wizard of Oz, there couldn't be anything better than that. So I think this is going to be the start of a real renaissance for pinball.
In 1975, I took a temporary job, what I thought would be a temporary job, repairing electromechanical pinball machines. And here I am, you know, 37 years later. What we decided to do in the beginning was we were going to build the greatest pinball machine ever, right? Because we're not going to go to mediocrity. Let's go to our way to third place, you know? So you have to be passionate, you have to be committed completely. Every molecule in your body has to say, you're going to do this, you're going to achieve this, you're going to succeed.
Jack is my dad, so he owned arcades and we had pinball machines in my basement my whole life and all that, so I was very exposed to it.
You'll see my son here and you'll see my daughter here. You know, Jen works for the company, she's worked for my companies for several years. Jack graduates from Westchester University on Sunday, and after the Christmas break, he starts with the company. And I didn't know that that would be a dynamic. I didn't know that that would even be something in the thought process that they would be involved. But it is very cool.
Big family affair. And then my uncle works in the back, my cousin's husband as well, so they do parts and everything. So.
If you have any links in the chain that don't believe in what you're doing, or they don't want to work really hard at it, not going to work. If you can't have fun working in a pinball factory, you can't have fun anywhere, and they have to have fun doing this too.
One day they were asking about slogans for the company, and I put on there Jack of all trades, master of fun, and he really liked it. He licensed it, and it's on all the games now. So that kind of got me in the door. And I started talking to him about doing board repair and things like that, and he saw that I had a real passion for the game, for a love for pinball, and wanted to be part of something like this in the startup. So he gave me the opportunity of a lifetime.
I found out about Jersey Jack from the Spooky Pinball podcast the day he announced that he was going to make Wizard of Oz pinball machine. Even though I wasn't really ever in the market for a new in-box pinball machine, I figured, you know, what the hell?
Everybody knows Wizard of Oz. You can't go anywhere without a Wizard of Oz reference anymore on TV and things like that. So this is just fantastic that you can, you know, be so recognizable.
We wanted to have a lot of mechanical toys on the game, interaction with the ball with toys. We wanted to have a loaded game, so we had to do a wide body game to give it more room, give Joe Balser and the other guys room to design and be free. This is what happens when the guy that owns the company doesn't say no. You can't do that. You know, the word was yes. And how?
Usually you have product, and then you sell the product. So this is like we had an idea, and so many people, you know, had faith in us.
I felt really great that people would believe in me and then other people in our team, and that we would sell 1,000 games that nobody ever played or nobody ever saw.
I think this game can do a lot more than any other game, probably, you know, yet. I can just really see, like, you know, the kids having a lot of fun with this when they come over. Just on the surface of just how it looks. If they, you know, they're not going to know about rules, really, or, you know, how deep the game is, or, you know, how far they are along the quest. You know, they just like, you know, I think they're going to really like it.
Pinball really is poised for a comeback, but it's poised for new generations to discover it. And our game, when you see it, you know it's a brand new game because it's got all this striking eye candy that right away you walk over to it and everybody has this holy cow moment. They say, I got to play this. I got to put money in this and play it.
If you want to know what my favorite pinball machine up to now was, it's the Addams Family, naturally. But this, I mean, I really can't judge this just from looking at it for a little while, but this might be bigger than the Addams Family. Who knows?
Another thing, I forgot to thank Ken and Ed and Paul and all the rest of the organizers for having us here. They did a great job. I mean, this place is huge or what? I think I crossed through 3 zip codes and maybe a time zone on my way from my hotel room over here. So, yeah, this is a massive hotel. I've never seen the likes. I apologize for us, projecting here on Grandma's bedspread up on the wall, but that's the best we could do. We figured that was better than using the little screen over here in the corner, so, you know, bear with us. Things are a little less crisp than I hoped. I hope some of the drawings that I'm going to show you, you'll still be able to see things well, but if not, I'll fill the time with some words, and we'll get through it together. So, let's see. I want to start with the open house and some pictures that I took. I took a camera there, and I wanted to talk to everybody and get some ideas. So the factory floor here, these things automatically go up. I thought you said you knew how to use PowerPoint. Jeez. When I say next, you hit. Okay. Back up. There you go. Okay. Now leave it alone. Stay. Sit. Okay. Good. These young guys, it takes a while to get them to train. But here's the 6 games that we had set up basically on the end of our assembly line here. We had play fields galore in various levels of assembly. A lot of people from the factory were there to ask questions to and get answers. We're waiting. One of the things we're waiting on right in here in this area was the RGB LED boards. There's cabinets galore. The guy packs these up in a big old trailer from, I guess it's
Galena, Illinois.
Yeah, thank you, sir. And drives them all the way out to the factory. Next. Here's our parts. I mean, if you look, you can see through here in a better resolution, but this is a whole big old square area with, you know, parts stacked from ceiling to floor. There's your back box assembly line. This is where all the LCDs are put in, the brackets, the light bar across the back. Then those are all added onto the cabinet line where everything's put together, minus the play field, and then we'll drop those in at the very end. Some of the faces related to the company, that's Jack and his lovely wife, Joanne. She keeps him grounded, you know, make sure he takes out trash and does the things us normal men do. Then he doesn't get too big of a head. Wives are great for that, by the way, aren't they? His lovely brother-in-law, Vinny. Vinny is married to Joanne's sister. He does parts for us in the company. Next. These are our two clerical, the Jen and Katie. They're in the front office. They are answering the phones when you call in with questions or orders or, you know, when's my game coming and those sorts of things. These are the ladies that you'll most likely interface with. On the factory floor, this is Ken Holland. He's our production manager. Drew Maniscalco, he's like head of the sales and things. He goes to the big shows and sells the games overseas and all. Jim Thornton, he kind of hides away from the cameras. You don't see his picture on the website and things like that. There's a reason for that, because every time he takes a picture, he looks like an axe murderer or something. But he says, you should see my Facebook page picture. And I looked at him, I'm like, holy cow, you got to be kidding me. But Jim has done so much for this company. I mean, the guy does everything from, you know, he's ordered and purchased and priced every single item that's in the game, every part that's in the game, orders the right number. He's got the bill of materials. He's been controlling that from the very beginning. He's, you know, constantly interfacing with vendors. You know, why is this part not right? You know, why, when is this stuff coming in? Why is this late? Those sorts of things. I mean, just, and then he does technical support. He's on the phone talking to guys that are at the distributors working through some issues that they have. I mean, the man does everything. He's really...
He's the one who built the original Whitewood. I mean, he's a big troubleshooter. The guy really knows what's going on with pinball.
A big trouble causer sometimes, too. But that we won't get into that. Joe Balser down here in the corner, he's a direct... And Jim's title in the company is Director of Product Development. This is Joe Balser, the man who designed the game. He's also the Director of Mechanical Engineering. Eric's working under him. He's responsible for the Simpsons Pinball Party and, you know, great games back from the Data East days. A lot of the, you know, the Apollo 13s with the 13-ball multi-ball, those sorts of things. Really talented and a great guy. This is some guys that work on the factory floor. This is Steve Zamonski. He and Larry Apici have been working with Jack with pinballsales.com for many, many, many years. That's his son, Jack Jr. He's been with Jack, obviously, all of his life. This is Sal, the husband of, I got to get all the family relations right here. Jen was talking about her cousin's husband works. That's Sal. And that's Vinny's daughter's husband. Vinny's daughter, yeah, I got that. It's starting to sound like Jersey Shore or something like that. It's crazy. Or Sopranos, maybe? I don't know. Okay, one of the things that he had on the set out for the wow, this is kind of rough, but it looks like cave dwelling drawings, but we'll get through this. He had a bunch of drawings that they had done for the game as it progressed, hanging on the wall of the break room, and people would come in and you could kind of go from panel to panel and see how things progressed. I thought those were kind of cool. I photographed them and then put them in this presentation. There's a few things I just wanted to, you know, kind of show you that have changed during the development. Next. So this is our Castle Mini Play Field. And if you look at the game out there, you see a much more, you know, cup-shaped rescue target setup than we've got here. This wasn't quite as pronounced, this curve in here, you know, for the shot to make that. That becomes a more of a makeable looping sort of shot, but this was just real early on. And then I think they put this hole in here just to drive people crazy. It's like, what in the heck is that going to be? Going to be like a gobble hole, or is there going to be some kind of an up kicker there? Or, you know, so yeah, a lot of different. I think maybe early on that was the way it was going to get up onto the playfield. I don't know, feed it to this flipper. You see the rainbow targets over here in this area of the playfield. You see, when you're early on, you're trying to determine what the angles are going to be to make the shots correct, you know, give you a little more access maybe to some of these upper. If you don't make this so steep, you can get to these shots a little easier. You know, some of the things that play into early development of a playfield. And then down in this area of the play field, you see these four targets weren't always BALL. I'm glad they changed that, because ETAF makes no sense at all. I don't know why they would do that. It's a good idea to change that. Again, the different angles here to make those where the ball travels across the play field. You know, anybody who plays pinball knows that once that ball starts going left and right across the play field, you're going to have to do something to keep it from going out the out lanes, or you're in deep trouble. The witch targets originally were going to be three separate targets. They had some idea that maybe you hit this target when the witch popped up the first time, you'd smack that center target. If you hit it direct center, she'd melt immediately. And if you hit the side ones first, then she'd melt just a little at a time, and you'd have to work your way to killing her. Next. And then down here, you'll notice also in the upper corner up there, Oz, early on, they knew those two lanes were going to be the Oz lanes. But oddly enough, the licensing with the Wizard of Oz is so complicated that Oz, the great and powerful type licensing, is different from the Wizard of Oz from 1939. So you get all these crazy things like, you know, this can't be Oz up here. It's got to be the Wizard of Oz. So you notice whenever it says Oz on the game out there, it says the Wizard of Oz. The Wizard of, little letters, but Oz. So, you know, you can't just have Oz by itself. Just one of those little quirks you get. Here's a little bit later drawing showing the playfield layout again. Things are getting tweaked a little more. Next. You notice, I don't know if you can even read those, but Tin Man and Scarecrow and Lion, none of these are in the place they are on the playfield currently. All these sorts of things changed. This one was much closer over here to the edge than it ended up being. And it's just, you know, that's lining up the shots, and you it's kind of odd. I was talking to somebody yesterday. It's kind of odd shooting at rollover targets. You know, it's like you want to hit something at the end of your shot and trying to line up a shot and then worrying about where the ball might hit after you make your rollover shot and, you know, go out the side or something like that. It's a whole different dynamic. Things early on, like the Glinda target up here, was they were thinking that might be a Ruby target. Kansas, you see this in the early shots a lot. And actually, it stayed in the game all the way, you'll see through these drawings, quite a long time. They were thinking that this S layout and the Kansas targets were going to be by that outlane pop bumper. But it turned out the action didn't work out very well, and they went to what we have now. Another drawing here. You got the Haunted Forest up in here, so you get spooks maybe going up into the there. You spell out for different shots up into the pop bumpers. You get some wisecracking names on the out lanes like goodbye and things. You know that's going to be the out lane later on, so you mark that for later. And again, here's something big. Here is going to be in the middle of the play field, and this up here might be sort of big, and that one's going to be like, oh my goodness, wow, that's going to be a big shot. And just place markers, for later on. Next. Now we start seeing them adding some of the artwork on top, and so now they're refining some of the aesthetic portions of it. You see this image, they used it again later. It's on that standard edition apron now. So, that's kind of cool. And the Lions and Tigers and Bears hot dog insert just kind of went away altogether. But the artwork has to work hand in hand with the inserts, which work hand in hand with your rule set and your designer and his shots and things like that. Well, you're getting way ahead of me here. Am I talking too much? Okay. Just making sure. And then spooks become spooky over here. It's another iteration. The scarecrow, they start working with different ways to set up the lettering next to scarecrow. And you'll notice on our games now, the fonts on the scarecrow, Tin Man, Toto, all that stuff, very plain. They don't like you in licensing, I guess, if you're using a trademark name to use these fancy fonts where someone might not be able to read what the word is, so they want it to be very plain. Again, another one of those subtleties. In this shot also, you notice the horse of a different color insert being added here, which is a major rule upgrade. You're going to have shots all over the playfield now that have these horse of a different color on them also, so that you can run a different mode using the same sorts of shots. It's a twister here. Ends up being up under the ramp in the later version, but here it's kind of the reversed. The lock is up under the ramp, and the twister thing's down here. Looks like it's coming out of the scarecrow's ear. That's probably not going to work too well. You need some cool shots up in this area. Cool one, cool two. That's a good place marker for that. Maybe extra ball on this winky guard at some point. Add a horse of a different color. Just some of the things they're working their way through. Next. Okay, here's another interesting, it's a little twist on that same characters, but now inside the ball. And now you start to see the witch's hands in there. That looks kind of cool. Something that might stick a little later on. Did you see the good versus bad side of the play field early on? They were using different plastic ideas just to get an idea how that would look. Next. This is the Haunted Forest again. Now we're working on different ways to do spooky. That was kind of clever, using the two O's in spooky for the owl's eyes. The witch and her broomstick are a big part of the movie, the theme. So we've got to do something with her broomstick in front of her there. And we start out with kill the witch. And, of course, the politically correct among us, we have a kindler, gentler world. We're probably going to have to change that. And you'll notice it did on the final game. Toto over here, this didn't change a whole lot. Like I said, the font got a lot simpler, but the little dog's down there, and then they put little doggy footprints walking around that way. Next. And then we went through, you can see in these drawings, a whole lot of iterations on these for these shot, shoot here type inserts. Trying to do something different, something unique, but then have that on all the different fan-ish sort of shots around our play field. Some early artwork for the monkey, the flying monkey here. This ended up being more like what we used on the plastic that covers the magnet that comes down and picks up the ball. And of course you see flying monkey, that the winged monkey is the correct trademark phrase, not flying monkey. And it's not just the lion, it's the cowardly lion. And so all these little subtleties. Again, up here is the same sort of which stuff, but now a lot, starting to add a little more detail. Maybe we'll put some shadows around the pop bumpers here, some shadows for trees and things like that. This piece of artwork is from the movie and ended up actually being on a piece of plastic now that's set up over here over the skill shot. Like I say, the I don't know what they've got up there, the flying monkey, is that what that says? I can't even say, or just monkey. It ended up being winged monkey. Let's see, we use haunted here now instead of spooky. The area up here to the winky guard is getting a lot more defined. Now you see some of those different, let's try something different for these shoot here shots, you know, different ways to frame those out. The twister now is moved up under the ramp. The ramp flap is here, so you got your twister up where it's supposed to be. Lock is still kind of in flux here, where we're going to put that. Next. Hurry up. You're written around the center of the play field where they put the hourglass, which it begins to get a little redundant. You know, an hourglass, you see that sand's falling, that tells you hurry up already right there. So they end up taking that out. No place like home. You got to have that somewhere on the play field, right? They put it on some of the back glasses too. So, you know, early on it was in the middle of there. That changed eventually too. Next. Next. Another more, this is getting very close to the final version now. Now we've got the witch and she's reaching for the ruby slippers. That's a really cool shot. Still have the old plastics, haven't changed the plastics there yet. Now they're putting this either a crystal ball or a pinball with their reflection in it. However, it's really hard to see in this lighting. But now the wizard, Yellow Brick Road starts to come out of the center there. It's a lot more defined. They start putting these concentric circles in here that later they start putting the Elvira Gulch on her bicycle and the house pieces and cows and things like that floating around in circle here. And then you see this is where they added the winged monkeys coming up the end lanes, which is still on the play field too. Very cool. Now we're getting to the final artwork here for the winged monkeys up there. Still says, now they say flying monkey here. That's got to change to winged monkey eventually. But, you know, this whole area is starting to get some notes in here about how we're going to have shading to like shadows of trees and branches and things going off into the fade into a sky up here at the top. That's the throne room, the beginning of the throne room there. They start, you know, the center of where the ball lands in there is where the wizard's head is and the green mist and all. There's a curtain here. There's going to be a plastic right on top of this area that has Toto pulling the thing back and revealing that the Wizard of Oz isn't so spectacular after all. The witch, you know, her broom is going to, like I said, is going to play a big part. That's the whole reason why they had to go kill the witch was to get the broom. So now we've got that kind of finalized. The haunted forest is very much, you know, more detail and looking like it ended up in the final version. Now you notice it's Melt the Witch. We got to be, like I say, kinder, gentler, you know, and instead of going to, you know, use harsh language at the witch or something like that, we had to go to, you know, just the Wicked Witch and put it on there. So, you know, we're not hurting her, we're just melting her. She'll come back, you'll see. Next, please. Now, this is a different, the same drawing as the previous, just other things I wanted to point out. The characters, again, are much more now in the position that they are. The lettering is still going to change. As you see on they have to add the cowardly over lion here and add the trademarks underneath all of these because these are all trademark names. You've got the, you know, Glinda behind Dorothy added into this, and we've got a mare now. Next. There's no place like home for this area now, to each one of those targets. I've got five targets now instead of the six that we had in the S originally. And you get a lot better action there with that pop bumper where all those targets direct the ball back into the pop bumper. You know, things like goodbye and the hurry ups have been getting a little more definition, showing that this is going to be a throne and the orbit hurry and all the other, the rainbow and things like that are coming down that side. And then What better way to say goodbye in The Wizard of Oz than click heels? So, you know, that it just all came together there. Again, the lock insert here, a lot of artwork over it, put it right in front of the ramp like it is now. The twister's moving up where it was supposed to be. And, of course, everybody knows about the flower field. Let's look at the possibility of putting flowers behind the flipper on the upper play field, and that didn't Yeah, not so much. So we moved on from that. Next. And then here's the final piece. This is what we ended up with. Again, like I said, the Wizard of Oz up here. You've got all your hurry-ups and things that they were showing earlier, the horse of a different color. And what's, you know, what strikes you looking at this is that every insert in here is clear. It's, you know, so we have RGB LEDs under every single area. Even the GIs are capable of the 32 million different colors. So, you know, a lot of programming for Keith to do on that front to get all the light shows working. So, you know, a lot of possibilities. I mean, just imagine being given this palette and somebody saying, you know, do your thing, Keith. You know, it's a massive undertaking. And I think when you see the game, I've heard this at several shows in the past, that when you see the game in person, that you really start to get it and you understand a little more why it's taking so long, a little more why, you know, there's been delays and things like that. And, you know, our customers, God bless them, you know, have been coming up to us and saying, you know, take as long as you need, and we're definitely doing that. But, you know, we're doing our best to get it out as quickly as possible, but we're also, you know, working really hard and changing things, making corrections, even this late in the game, fixing little things that we see, and just swallowing it, you know, throwing away these old this screw or this part that didn't work, and getting new stuff in. So it's an exercise in Murphy's Law, basically. You know, it always takes longer than you think it will. And when you make that as your first product, when you put that game out, while you're starting up a company, while you're bringing in new employees, all this kind of thing, it's just a massive undertaking. And we appreciate your patience. Okay, some other cool things you see only at the factories. Things I saw. You got Disco Jack. He's dancing fool. He's up on top of the parts cabinets. Got to get him down from there every so often. And there's the clothes. He's a happy dancer, not just your normal. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. And then on the refrigerator, we have His Honor Mayor Steve. He's Steve Zemanski out there. Didn't know he was the former Munchkin Land. He looks a lot taller in real life. This is hangs over Jack's office door. Nobody gets in to see the wizard. Not nobody, not no how. And he has the most massive collection of Wizard of Oz stuff that you've ever seen, just piled up in corners all around his desk. It's amazing. He says everybody he meets wants to give him something. And they give it, and he puts it up there. He displays it with everything else. It's really cool. And then some inspiration for our next game hanging on the wall right outside his office. And now, I put that on there originally thinking, you know, kind of change the order on us here. If you don't mind me taking another 5 or 10 minutes, I'll show you a little bit about the manual. I'm writing the manual for the Wizard of Oz, and then we'll take some questions after that. I came in, you know, last year at this show, Jack introduced me as a guy that's going to be running around the country and teaching people how to use the, you know, maintain, repair, play the game. So, you know, I was technical support and that sort of thing was going to be my forte. That's kind of evolved a little bit. Now I'm going to actually get to do some of the help with the design on the next game. I'm really excited about that and being in on the ground floor with that. But one of the first things, you know, we were talking on the phone, Jack and I, and he asked, you know, how things are going. I'm wanting to get involved. And he's like, well, we're just not there yet. We're not ready for you to come on. And I asked him about the manual. And he said, you can write? And I said, yeah, I'm kind of an oddity in electrical engineers like that. I actually can write. Electrical engineers are, you know, if it's difficult to figure out, it ought to be difficult to convey on paper, I guess. It's kind of that programming sort of thing, but... So I'm going to show you some of the, you know, the scope here of what you're doing when you take on the manual for the Wizard of Oz. You've seen that game there. Imagine, you know, being now same thing as sort of thing as Keith when they bring you in and they just say, well, here's the game. You know, document it. Everything in here is going to have a part number. You need to have a drawing of it and show where pieces are. They can order parts. They can take some apart, put it back together again, without having to, you know, photograph the whole experience. Well, this is the Wizard of Oz playfield with everything on it, looking from the top as if it were transparent. You see all this stuff underneath. You see all the stuff on the top. A lot of it's very simplified, like these flipper mechanisms and things. But you got everything from your routing to your holes to your spotting for mounting things to T-nuts. Everything is in this everything from, you know, size of T-nuts and plastics and yellow. This yellow outlines the plastic, and you got pop bumpers, and you got pop bumper bodies and holes inside the pop bumper. Yeah, that's amazing, the detail here. This goes all the way down to the little resistors and all on the RGB LED boards. So, you know, you look at that and you say, well, okay, now I want to do a drawing to put in the manual to show, you know, the rubbers and where the locations are and what sizes they are. Well, how can you do that? Well, I've got, first thing when I started the manual, I knew we were going to have a wide body game. We're going to have a big monitor in the back box. Monitors are never square anymore. They're always oblong. So the first thing that came to mind was if we're gonna have a wide body game and a wide body monitor up there, why don't we have a wide body manual? So what I did was I told Jack I don't want to put this on 8.5 by 11. I'm gonna use legal size 8.5 by 14. I'm not gonna stand it up this way. I'm gonna lay it on its side, and I'm gonna put it in some kind of a binding to where you don't have to lay, you know, your screwdriver and your crescent wrench and everything else to keep it open while you're trying to work on the game. I want it to fold open, and now when I fold two pages of legal open facing one another, I've got a heck of a canvas there for putting drawings and then information to where you can see them all at the same time. And I do have a hard copy that I unfortunately didn't bring with me from my room, but I'll have it out there around the, you know, if you want to talk afterwards, I can show it to you, a hard copy of it. But so, you know, you can do a lot of cool things and have a lot of information and have it big enough where a person can read while he's doing something working here on the game without having to pick it up and look or get it under one of those magnifiers and things like that. So trying to make something that's a little easier to read and something that's unusual, something that hasn't been done before in the past. So, hey, like I said, I've done a lot of board work. I've seen manuals from every manufacturer, from the old Bally's and the old Gottlieb manuals, and, you know, what they called manuals back in the electromechanical days, all the way up through Data East, Sega, the Stern manuals, Williams, Bally, everything all the way up through the 90s. And I see things that I really like in this manual. I see things I really like in that one. Boy, I can't stand that in that manual. You know, and now I get to choose, you know, so it's really cool to do that. It's also, you know, quite a responsibility too, and I take it very seriously. I want something that'll work really well for us, really well for you. So now if you move left and right here, this is the main play field, and it's got a view from the top that shows the routing and all the pieces that are mounted on the top here, you know, down to the ramps and things like that, drop targets. And then you've got the other side, you've got from the bottom side, and you see what the up kickers and rollover switches and all that sort of thing, RGB LED boards, flipper mechanisms, slingshots, all that sort of thing look like. So if I'm going to do one for doing, documenting rubbers for the game, then I'd probably start with the top. So I then take this file and I copy a piece and part out of it. This is what's given to me by the Joe Balsers of the world and says, here's your play field, Butch, you know, good luck with that. And so I delete everything out of that I'm not going to be documenting right now. I know I'm not going to do much on, you know, T-nuts and things like that. So I take a lot of the routing and the holes and things that aren't going to show out, and I simplify it to this version in AutoCAD. Now, and a drawing is made in AutoCAD. If it's done correctly, then you can actually come back in. This one's got the ramp moved off to the side. But you can actually go in different layers here, and I can turn parts on and off that I don't want to see, so I can go down in this list here, and, you know, Joe does a great job of separating things out. If I don't want to see the flat rails anymore, I can just turn those off. If I don't want to see, you know, flipper bats, I can get where you can see the flipper bats here. Can turn those off. You still see the rubber, that's the green going around them there, where they were before. Something a little more, getting this right list here. Take all the plastics off, for instance. Then all the plastics disappear. So I can turn all those on and off, and then I can, you know, get into these individual pieces and work with them and select things without selecting, you know, other areas that I didn't intend to. The layers thing is very powerful, is what I guess I'm trying to say, in my usual more than words than necessary. When I take that now and I send it off, I save it in a DXF type format that I can then call into Adobe Illustrator. And in Adobe Illustrator, then I have the same sort of thing in Adobe. When I save it in a DXF format, it actually saves things, the layers also, so that when I get it over into here, if I want to turn these on and off, I can turn the rubbers on and off just by doing that. And you see, oh, the flipper rubber didn't go away. Well, the flipper rubber is a different layer on here. So, like, it's rubber one here, these guys, and the flipper rubbers go away. So, very powerful, you know, in terms of selecting and building things. But I also have to go in and you know, make these into solid objects and make them, you know, color them and things so that I can then, you know, do something that shows them in greater detail. In fact, I can even take and rearrange the layers now that it preserved those layers. And you see the plastics are still here, but I can now take the rubbers and put them on top of the plastics just to call them out better. And then I add the little circles with the numbers and all. And then I have a Excel spreadsheet here where I go in and I've got all the part numbers and everything that I've gotten from the bill of materials. And I've got the descriptions for these. And, you know, Jim Thornton allowed me to change the names of some of the things. You know, when you're putting a million parts together, you don't always have the time to sit down and think of, you know, when somebody says, well, gee, I need one of these flipper rubber rings or something, this is kind of a simple example. But, you know, some of the names that he was coming up with things, I was thinking, you know, if someone got on the phone and said, you know, I'm missing this, and they rattle off this 42 character, you know, parts description, the person on the phone, give me a part number. You know, I want to be able to make things a little more transparent to people out in the field, you know, make a little more sense, or I don't have to have the part number exactly for you to know what I'm talking about. So, you know, I worked on that as I went along too, part of the slowdown. And you got how many are on each. So then I take all of this, and I've got one here for flat rails, and I got ball guide rails and switches and, you know, mini playfield switches and dedicated. All these are going to correspond to a page in the manual that I then take over into InDesign. And now I've got the playfield drawing here. I turn it on the side now because I've got a wide body page. And then the next page here has drawings of the smaller playfields. And so these will be facing pages in the manual. And you'll have the rubber rings information here that just copies paste across this tab delimited text and drop it right in. I don't want to get too technical with this, but that's just, you know, one small area. Then I go back to that main drawing again, and I start deleting things and taking stuff off and moving things to the top to show flat rails, to show, you know, plastic posts, metal spacers. Look on that game for metal spacers. You'll see 100 bazillion of them on there. It's a lot of things to document. So in those words, I'm telling you why it's taking me so long to get the manual out. So just so you can kind of commiserate with me a little bit there. Now we can
try to get the wizard on the line.
Yeah, gets the Skype master over here. The technologically challenged out of the way.
Hello.
Hey, Jack.
Welcome to Texas, Jack.
Everything's bigger in Texas, so I guess my picture's bigger on the screen, huh?
Yeah.
Is anybody still awake after Butch got finished explaining about the game?
All right, I'll get you for that.
You know, I was happy that Butch and Eric are there, and I think it's more important that the game is there than me. But first of all, hello, everybody. How's everybody this morning? Yeah. The show looks... I was already reading Martin's report this morning about the show, and it looks big. Everything's bigger in Texas, so congratulations to the guys. You know, Paul and Ed and Kim, I know so many people work really hard on the show. And I just got back from Italy. I just flew in and my arms are tired. So I didn't make it out to Texas. I'm sorry. But where's Johnny Norman? Is he there? Where is he? Johnny, if I could hug you, just this is a hug for you, all right? I'm sorry, buddy. You can't... But I'm not there, but I'll get out there. Do I sound okay? Am I getting an echo or anything?
All right. Yeah, you're good.
You sound normal, okay. Yeah.
Cool. So, you know, I just wanted to tell everybody that I kind of, you know, it's not that I picked Texas not to go to. You know, I'm not going to Vegas next week to the AMOA show, and I'm not going to Midwest Gaming Classic. And I see Martin there right in the front typing away, hey, Martin, and where's Jim? Where's my buddy Shellberg? Where is he?
I spent the whole day with him yesterday. I may have already kind of wore him out. I don't know. He knows he's going to get a copy of my presentation, too.
Well, you can't wear him out. It's impossible to wear him out, you know. So the more he asks for information, if you push him away, the more he asks for. So just give him whatever he wants and make him happy, you know. You know, the show in Italy was really amazing for me. It was my first time at the Anata show. And to see the response of operators, especially to the game, they were very energized. And I came away from there with a little different understanding of what's going on in the world. They have some great Italian collectors, and they had the IFPA Italy had a tournament on Wizard of Oz that was a lot of fun. And we got coverage. Good thing the Pope was chosen later in the day. Because we had to get coverage battle with the white smoke and the black smoke of the Pope to get coverage, but they did cover pinball at the show, and a lot of operators are very very excited about operating Wizard of Oz. Also, what I didn't realize is that in other countries, Wizard of Oz is not that well known. So with the release of the new movie this week. A lot more people around the world are going to first discover Wizard of Oz, and I think that's pretty cool because a lot of the people that were playing Wizard of Oz loved it as a pinball machine already, and they didn't understand what flying monkeys were and some of the other elements of the game. So I think going along this next year, and as we get games out to all of you that ordered it and on location and around the world, it's only going to get better even as we get into the 75th anniversary of the movie later at the end of this year when that whole celebration starts. You know, we're going to ship real games this month. Less than 2 weeks from today, we'll be shipping real games. And I just want to tell everybody the games, you know, we're planning that they are feature complete and, of course, ongoing software. Continuing support. You know, it's not that we're going to pull Keith and Ted and Alex and Kip or anybody working on software. We're going to pull them off the game and they're going to go work on Hobbit because Hobbit at this point obviously is in development. And I'll talk about that in a little bit, in a couple minutes. But we didn't come all this way to develop this game and spend a couple $1 million in 2 years to develop the game and then put it out there and it's not what we would all expect it to be. So we're going to stay on that road and make sure that it's as great as we could possibly make it and beyond because what we've done with a lot of the game is go, you know, too much actually with some of it. But I really wouldn't have changed a lot of things about the game as it is. I'm very happy with it. Games that are on location now, collections, are, you know, better and better every single week at locations that have them. You know, there's been software updates every week, every 2 weeks, games on location. So I'm happy with how that's working. So, you know, pretty much, you know, I'm happy where we are. I'm, you know, always the eternal optimist. Would have been better if we shipped games 3 or 4 months ago, but we couldn't do it. You know, it's coming together. Anybody have any questions? Let me stop for a minute. Anybody got any questions for me about anything? Yeah. The biggest thing I learned through this process is that everything is going to take more time and more money than anybody tells you it's going to take. And, you know, it's no excuse, but it's not easy to make something from an original idea today in this country. We have some games that are made in China, for our other company, and their Video Redemption, and they'll be one of them actually on display at IAPA at AMOA next week. And you know, it took us, when you see the game and the introduction, it's a beautiful game. It makes money on location. It took us 2 months to make the game. So, you know, making a video game, making other things, it's a lot less complicated. Doing this, I don't think I would have said no to anybody again. I think, you know, we did learn. This is going to be probably the worst game we ever make. I said that to some people in Italy, and they got a good laugh because they understood what I was saying. I was very lucky to meet Marino Zaccaria, who is basically the Harry Williams of Italy. You know, they were the third biggest pinball manufacturer in the world years ago. And a lot of people came to love a lot of their games. And I had a great conversation with him and the people at Technoplay. And to have Technoplay as my distributor is another really good thing for us in Italy. But yeah, everything takes more time and more money. That's what I learned. And that was a lady? Well, that's the smarter sex for sure. You can't make. I said it last year in Texas, and I say it a lot of different places I go. You know, why would I want to make a game that eliminates children and women? So what we're finding on location, and people like Parker at Marvin's Mechanical Museum, or Kaz, or Alan Pinaholic in Manhattan at the bar, or Buddy in the movie theater. All the places that we're finding our games, you know, young people playing the game that never played pinball, and women, girls. You know, you put that game in a bar, and every girl in the bar is playing that game, and every guy is next to every girl trying to play the game with her. So I really enjoy that. That's something that I hoped a couple of years ago would happen, and I see it happening on location. So that's very cool. You're over there. So our assembly line, we had an efficiency expert from our industry come in and tell us what we could build on our assembly line a day under you know, if the sun was shining and the moon was out and everything like that. And you know, it's about 60 games a day. I don't envision us getting to 60 games a day, maybe ever. But you know, the plan is to get to between 10 and 15 games a day by the middle of April, and I pretty much think that's realistic, being that all the parts are here. We continue to hire more and more people every day. You know, somebody told me that I created more jobs in the last 2 years than the U.S. government created in the last 4 years. So, you know, it's really cool. We have an online ad for assembly people for the assembly line, and we got 145 applicants that we've been going through, bringing people in. I talked to Ken, who runs production in the back. Another four people are starting on Monday. So, you know, it's a gradual thing where we've taught people, we've brought people in. They've learned, run through everything. So, you know, when I look at it now, some days feel like 2 years, some days feel like 200 years, some days feel like 2 weeks since we're doing this. But I think we're in really good production numbers as we get through April into May. A lot of people are going to get games. There's a lot of stuff in this building. There's $4.5 million worth of parts here. Just the parts department alone in the back is 12,000 square feet of the building, all racked, all organized because of the people. It's amazing when I go back there and see what's going on that it's crazy to me sometimes, especially when customers come visit and we show them through what's going on. It's like, how did this all happen? You know, it's just, but it's amazing. We got a pinball manufacturing company. It's crazy, but we do. You know, I was online with the video, and I was watching how to do it. You know, if I really wanted to do the Skype in the factory because I wanted to show more stuff. But in the back, I don't know, the wireless or the G3 or the G4 or whatever it was didn't work clearly. I was gonna, but there will be a video of me doing a cartwheel as Real Game Ship later this month. You know, I didn't think. First of all, I was in Italy when they shipped out a couple of games the other day, and they were boxed up. So, you know, I have a couple of glasses of wine. It's easy to do a cartwheel. No, I might just do a handstand. You know, walk around on my hands. Yep, I get that. I kind of answered that almost in advance before by saying that The Wizard of Oz is our worst game that we're going to do. So you can't expect to see things evolve. I think 5 years from now, when I look back at The Wizard of Oz and we're into game number 4 or 5 by then, I could always look back at it being proud of it and proud of what the team did as a first game. But I do see technology as it's changed, even in the design. And I mean, Butch and Eric, if you get them and you get a couple of beers into them, you know, they would probably tell you about a lot of the changes that we made to this game, you know, just in the last 6 months or 7 months or 8 months, you know, because we could have said this is it and we're done and it's good enough and it's going to work. But we changed things. You know, you saw at IAPA, there was a tornado driver board that was on the playfield. The tornado driver board is gone, and that board is incorporated into the I.O. board. There are other subtle changes that you might not see on the top of the game, but were under the game. Because remember, you know, as a technician and as an operator, I have a unique personal experience that a lot of other people may not have. Pinball designers were never pinball people that repaired pinball machines on a route. Pinball designers were never people that were operators that revenue shared hundreds of games on location. So my sensitivity was always that the game, first and foremost, work, and that the game is fun. So if those two elements are there, the game is going to be a really cool game to have in your home. It's going to be a really cool game to operate, you know, and make money with. So those were the dynamics. But I could see maybe less wiring in the game at some point going forward. As I said in the past, we didn't want to be too radical and make a lot of little circuit boards and things like that that can't be repaired by an operator. We want to try to have things that are user-friendly, operator-friendly. That's why a warranty on our game is a year. On a lot of components have a year warranty. And you know what? It wouldn't surprise me if somebody has something out of warranty and they call up and I say, yeah, just send them that thing. Who cares? I don't really care. You know, it's more about supporting the product out there, making sure you have fun with it in your home, that the people coming over to play it have a great time, that the games on location work and we support them. That's more important to me really than the money part of it also. If we weren't doing The Hobbit, what would be our next license choice? Huh. You know, there's a real funny coincidence about today's date and The Wizard of Oz, because 2 years ago today, the license belonged to Elout USA. And at the time, I was partners with Elout. And, you know, my partner at the time didn't want to do a pinball machine. He, you know, he wasn't part of Jersey Jack Pinball at Elout. They asked to have 10% of my new company, which I said, okay, fine, without any investment. And then they kind of got spooked about pinball. Some people went and talked to them and scared the crap out of them. And all of a sudden, 2 years ago today, the license belonged to Elout, and Jersey Jack did not have the license for The Wizard of Oz. Okay, and this rolled out on the 15th of March, which happens to be the Ides of March. So be careful when friends of yours stab you in the back and kill you on the 15th. That was the day it happened. Can't make it up. The 16th and then the 17th, St. Patrick's Day, I solved the problem. And it was the 19th, St. Joseph's Day, which I actually signed the agreement with Warner Brothers. So to go back to the story, you know, at Elout, I licensed The Wizard of Oz because I wanted to have this big anchor theme on a redemption game that we were working on. And that game, still today, is the greatest redemption game built as The Wizard of Oz pusher that Elout has. Now they have them as a 6-player, a 3-player, a 2-player. In Europe, I saw it. Now they have a ticket dispenser on it. So God bless them. They're doing really well with the game. I'm happy about that. With our license for The Wizard of Oz, I wound up going back and renegotiating it and getting it. If I didn't get The Wizard of Oz, you know, we were thinking, the first license we were thinking of was the Three Stooges. And, you know, the Three Stooges was always my favorite because, you know, all the slapstick stuff. And what happened, the people that owned the Three Stooges, they kind of gave us a hard time about a license fee, what it would be. And it kind of frustrated us in the beginning. And then I asked Drew to find out what Warner Brothers had, and that whole list of things came in the story about, well, get me The Wizard of Oz. And he said, really? You want The Wizard of Oz? You know, so if it wasn't The Wizard of Oz, so the question, right? If it wasn't The Wizard of Oz, it would have had to be something that was friendly, family-friendly, and gender-friendly and fun. So I don't know what it would have been, but I'm going to tell you my original thought of what it was is what I'm working on for license, for another license and another license and another license. We're working on three different licenses right now. One of them's a music license, one of them's a movie license, and one of them is a different kind of license. No. What happens with code is that we never release the latest code. You know, between Keith and Ted, you know, they have the latest code. You know, if Keith is home coding right now on his game, obviously his game is a lot further advanced than your game is. So, you know, it'll probably be in the 60s or something like that by the time we ship games. And really, you know, you know, it's got to be a game. And I'll tell you one thing that was a good thing that I thought in Italy, with all the Italian players there, and them, some of them knowing what The Wizard of Oz were, and some of them not knowing it, they beat the crap out of those games for about 8-9 hours straight. And none of them said to me a lot of the things that I thought they might have said to me. They did ask me questions about, you know, modes and what would happen and this and that. But they had a blast on the games as they were. And you know, I know I said it before. I wrote it on our group. But if we were way back in the day, let's say it's 1992, and we built this game and it worked and you put it on location and it made money, I guess you could call it a day. You know, that the game was good enough to be a game. But certainly we know today, by standards of what we do with this game, all the amazing light shows, all the animation, all the sound, all of that stuff, wait till this game is done. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be amazing. If you like it now, you're just going to like it a lot more. You know, I can't lie to a kid especially. You know, not that I lie a lot anyway. I think we all lie to some extent, but sometimes we embellish things or whatever. So, now, Jared, you remember what I told you about the crystal ball, right? What did I tell you? It was a light show? Right. So, so there's the topper. And you know, you people ask all kinds of questions. You must figure right over here I got something that I could pull out. So, you know, I am the Wizard of Pinball. You know, apparently some people have said that. Some people called me the Pope of Pinball, which I felt bad when they, you know, it was really cool being in Italy when they chose a new Pope. That was pretty cool. So, Jared, there's the topper. That's the topper for the Emerald City Limited Edition. The topper that you've seen on all the games, the green one, is the topper for The Wizard of Oz, the regular games that we're doing. Okay? Thank you. Well, you know, I've looked at it this way for a long time. Our products, when we operate our games on location, let's go there first, right? So when we operate our games on location, we're competing against everything in an FEC. We're competing against the crane that picks up something that you're never going to win almost. You're competing with redemption games that give tickets. you're competing with other things there for amusement and entertainment. So that's why we built the game the way we built it and put all the things into it that we put into it. I will say that the game as it is now, what it is going to become, okay, the Wizard of Oz is the Wizard of Oz. And let me try to put this the right way. What the game is right now is complete, but what the game is going to do in another few months is what we're going to introduce next, in the next phase of what the game does. Because that game right now is only a vehicle for proof of concept of other things that we're going to make Jersey Jack Pinball Machine do. How it's going to be able to interact in an amusement center, how it's going to be played, and how players are going to interact with each other through the game. So I think competitors, there's probably about 6 or 7 or 8 different companies now, maybe 10 companies building pinball machines in different stages, whether they're, building 10 games or 20 or 30 games at a time or 100 games or whatever they're doing. I think in the last 2 years, a lot of people have told me that we have created a lot of excitement in pinball, that we've brought a lot of people forward, where we've empowered a lot of people to believe that they're able to do things. We've also, again, people that worked for our company that were not able to get jobs in the industry, they were able to get jobs at other companies, working places. So I'm really happy about that. I think competition is the greatest thing on earth, because it would be very boring if you had only the Texas Rangers and they weren't playing the Yankees, okay? It would be, once in a while we like to win, though, we don't want to get our ass kicked all the time. But, it would be very boring. It would be very boring if there was only one of anything, because the last of anything on the planet is Big Loser. So you don't want to be a loser. You don't want to be the last doing anything. You really wonder why you're still doing something if you're the last. So having 2, 3, 4, 5 different companies competing with each other, it gives you the opportunity as a player to go play different pinball machines. It gives the operator an opportunity to buy different pinball machines and operate them and have them in a location competitively making money. And I think it's a lot healthier. So things that we do, we're going to keep doing them. We're going to keep spending money. We're going to keep innovating. We're going to keep creating. And, that's how the company has to be. It has to always think ahead. And, again, I said it many times before. It was like my iPad analogy a couple of years ago. I really didn't know I wanted an iPad until I saw the thing. So we want to try to get you what you don't even know you want yet. That's what we want to try to create. I just talked to you about The Hobbit for a second or two, right? So on The Hobbit, we've been working on incorporating a lot of the ideas that are up on the Jersey Jack Ball group. And we have a team meeting in the middle of April to figure out exactly what's going on in the game. We're going to be reading the script and seeing some movie assets in the next month or so. And, I'm still on a timeline of delivering that game, having that game ready in the summer of 2014. And while the third movie is not scheduled to come out now till winter, Christmas of 14, we could always add other assets into the video portion of the game that JP does and stuff like that. There's going to be an announcement probably next week about who's doing the music for the game, because that's an amazing development that we have on that game is who's going to be doing the original music for it for us. And it's going along a lot faster than Wizard of Oz, I can say that. It's true, I'll get the t-shirt. The second game is easier than the first game. So I'm real happy about that too. All right? Anybody else, anything? All right, good. Hey, if this works, I never have to go to a show again. No, I want to be at a show. I love being there. I do miss it. I probably could have done it. You know, my flight last night to come to Texas was at 7:30, and I got in from Italy like about 3 o'clock by the time I cleared customs. So I could have thrown my bag in the car of all the dirty clothes, got a new bag with all clean clothes, and then went back in the terminal and got on the plane and then came out there. So I probably could have done it. Maybe I'll have to do that next time. I know. Well, you know what? The first year I did Texas and Midwest Gaming Classic in the same day. I took 4 flights in one day, so I'm not that lazy. I just figured you guys could handle it without me. That's all. I have a lot of confidence in you guys. All right? Thank you all. Thanks, everybody. Go have a lot of fun. Thank you.
One last little thing I wanted to mention before we break up here. Down in front here, you want to stand up, Kip? This is Ryan Kip Vorderman. We all have nicknames in this company, it seems like. He's signed on to work with software, too. So he's working on the updater and things for the game. So you want to ask him some questions about software, about what he's seen of Keith's code, you know, corner him somewhere. And a question over here?
There's lots of speculation about how we'll update the software. Is there Wi-Fi built into the game?
It's got a, you know, commercial off-the-shelf CPU board that you can hook anything you can hook into a normal computer to. So, yeah, Wi-Fi is a possibility in the future. Currently, no, but, you know, that's something we'll look at down the road. And I imagine if that comes out with The Hobbit, then you would have a kit to upgrade your Wizard of Oz to the same capability. That's kind of what we're looking at.
As of right now, it's just a USB stick. You load your code on.
Yeah, Kip can answer that.
So that's one of the things we're working on right now. As the motherboard stands right now, you can plug in an Ethernet cable to it, and it should be able to pull down an update from a server on the internet.
Yeah. So, you all expect to have one?
Yes.
Yeah, that's one of the things I'm trying to work out with Keith right now.
Good, so. Yeah, we're going to have updates and tech support online. A lot of capability there to be developed and put into place over the next few months. So.
Hey, Butch, you got any Easter eggs?
Hey, if it's not broke, it ain't pinball. If there's no pinball, there's got to be some Easter eggs in there, right? I mean, if I tell you, well, yeah, they said my name was going to be in there way back when from putting the, you know, slogan on the arch and all that, but I don't know. We'll see. That's the fun part about Easter eggs. Well, I told you about it. It wouldn't be any fun, would it? It wouldn't be near as cool when you finally came up. Sir?
For future shows, I think this is my opinion, but it'd be nice to, I know tournaments are a big part of shows, but it'd be nice to have more shows on the floor than just tournaments.
Yes.
More games.
And that's just, you know.
I agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a logistics issue at this point. You know, the end of the assembly line, you know, they're putting together the few games that we're sending out to these shows before we wind up for real production, and there's just not a heck of a lot of games available right now. He's getting more out to distributors so that people can play them in showrooms and things like that.
The public playing it should be more important than the tournament.
Absolutely. But you know, I was sitting in the audience where you guys are last year, and I heard Jack say to the guys, I can't wait till next year when we have games to put out there for your tournament and all that. And yeah, they wanted 4 games, 5 games, whatever. We took 8 games to IAPA last November, and we had 8 games set up there. And boy, you talk about running around from one to the other, a trap ball, this or that. You know, that it's a nightmare to keep up with the things when you're at that point in your development of a game. But yeah, as we get, you know, the games are rung out better and everything's working a lot better. And with they're coming off the end of the line, 15 a day, that will be a lot more likely to happen. We'll have more games at the shows and more out there where people can play. I hear what you're saying, and I agree with you.
How many EL games are they making, and how many regular games are they making per day?
They're making 1,000 of the standard, or sorry, of the limited edition.
Right, but I mean, how many are they going to do each day of which machine?
Oh, that I don't know.
That's a good. That's a mixture of parts and things. You know, the rails, the wire ramps, the lockdown bars, things like that. While most of that is cabinet parts, the differences between the. So you know, the play fields will be pretty much the same. The wire ramps are a little different, and the aprons are a little different. But You know, where they start mixing in, I know the limited editions have paid for theirs, and they're paid in full and have been that way for quite some time. I would imagine that the big thrust is going to be the limited edition games out first and then start filling the standards. But that's not to say we wouldn't build a few standards here and there, too, and start feeding that market. Because those do go to the operators and get them out to where people can play them in the movie theaters and the entertainment centers and such, too. So it'd be a big deal, too. Sir?
So when are we going to have a game on location here in Dallas?
Fun Billiards, the local distributor here, is taking the game from the floor on Sunday and bringing it back to their showroom.
Mesquite, Texas. Yeah, they're down in Mesquite, I believe. So there'll be one there available to play. On location, yeah, it's in a distributor showroom, so. So you won't have to pay to play it, probably. That's probably a better thing yet. But, make an appointment, call the guy up, and Steve Nordseth, and see when you can get by to play it. And when will we have them on location here? That's a matter of, who's bought some of these in this area and plan on putting them out on route. Some people are going to route limited edition games when they get them. So it's hard to say when how many will be where at this point. So. Yes, sir.
What your overall production run is going to be, or is it just supply and demand?
Jack says he wants to build the Wizard of Oz as long as people keep buying him. He'd like to sell one to everybody. So, yeah, they're going to keep going as long as there's demand.
Is it going to be like the Skirm thing where they rerun stuff, all the come down, let's run some more?
I wouldn't count that out, no. I would think that would be a very distinct possibility, yeah. They've talked about using we have a huge factory up there. We're not using the whole floor, present. A lot of it's just storing parts for and pieces, the big cabinets and all that. So, they've talked about things like setting up one corner to do a smaller, simpler game or something like that. Maybe redoing the Shuffle Alley. Jack's talked about that a few times. There's a lot of things that could go on in that factory. A lot of things could happen in parallel that wouldn't even affect each other. So.
All right, guys. So Butch and I will be out on the floor all day. If you have any questions?
I have a hard copy of the manual. My buddy went up to the room and got it. So this is kind of the thing I was talking about, where you can have a drawing here and you can have all the information below where you can read it. This will be in PDF format, so we'll be able to load it onto your LCD when you're working on your game. If the LCD doesn't work for some reason, you've got the hard copy. So that's kind of what I'm thinking. And then update this as we go. It'll be kind of like the software. We'll give a hard copy and a PDF update every time you add more information to the manual. And so you get back to, points back here where, let me get to the circuit boards. Well, here's the matrices for the 50 volt coils, our fuse locations, schematics. I have one of the RGB LED boards here that I've put in, so it's a lot of work to get all these in. Look under that play field when we lift it up one of these times, there's a heck of a lot of circuit boards and things in there, so a lot of work left to do, but we plan on updating it as we go. I don't have to have the manual finished when the first game comes out, thank God, and so I can update that and send you hard copy and electronic updates, and you can just pull these pages out of your whatever binder that we put them in and add the new ones in and have the latest, greatest manual. So. Thank you, guys. We appreciate everyone being here.